I had this experience when I was in residency. I had an experience where I saw someone outside my emergency room last week, and it reminded me of this story that happened in residency. And I wonder, I'm going to pose this up front, what you guys would do in this case. But I was in residency, and I was doing my ICU rotation. The first day of my ICU rotation, I'm hanging out. I'm with a bunch of the fellows there, and we get this patient coming in. The first night I was there, I was on call. In the middle of the night, this woman comes in. She was a young woman. She was probably like 21. Came from the ER. She was intoxicated, unknown drug ingestion, but she was intubated. She was like tweaking on something. We don't know if it was like some sort of synthetic cannabinoid, like K2 or crystal meth. There was some crystal meth out in Long Island during those days. Whatever the case may be, she came in. She was like completely, she was confused, agitated. She was like hypermetabolic. She was hyperthermic, high blood pressure, tachycardic. No one really knew what was going on, but she was intubated, sedated, and resuscitated and brought upstairs to the ICU. And so I receive her, and she was like, a young, you could tell, kind of like cool person. Like, that's the thing about being in the ICU. You assess these, or just being in, clinically, you can kind of just see what someone's like based on their styling, like little subtleties, like their tattoos and like how their nails are, like what sort of like little subtle hints of what this person's life is like, how they take care of themselves based on these little tiny things. And one of the things about being in the ICU that I think is interesting, that's very different from being in the ER, is that first night initiated my relationship with this woman, because she, for the subsequent 4 weeks I was there, I tended to her every day. And in that tending, I got to know her, the physical landscape of her body. I put a line in her. We had to like change the endotracheal tube. I had to put a Foley in her and replace the Foley and replace the lines. And I like took her vital signs. I like did physical exam every day. I knew literally every nook and cranny of this person and like every person that I saw up there. And that's to some degree what we do in a limited sense when we're in the ER. But in the ICU, it's much more intense and it's much more longitudinal. And there's something satisfying about that that I realize I missed, and I still kind of miss when I'm in the ER. So this was a unique opportunity for me to really, really pore over exactly what was going on with this person. And during the course of her 4 weeks, she was very sick. She like developed like she had a bacterial, I think she had a pneumonia, and then she was tachycardic and febrile for like the first 2 weeks. We couldn't extubate her. Then she developed like a fungemia. We had to like tap her. We wondered if like that she had some sort of like, opportunistic infections. And we really couldn't find anything. The long and short of it is, up until she came up to like the last couple of days before she was gonna get like a permanent tracheostomy. And so the day she was gonna get the trach, she suddenly improved. And that was like almost, that was the second to last day I was in the ICU. And so she miraculously improved such that she was actually discharged. She went to a step hall the night discharged. I guess my last, like I was on call the night before she like was supposed to get trached. The next day I came in, I didn't come in that day because I left that morning. And the day after, my last day, she was already gone. She was like immediately like disappeared. And so I was like, oh, that's great. It became this kind of like, story you'd tell each other, when we were in the call room, like mention it for like 30 seconds and just move on with the rest of your day. And so, I thought about it, that was kind of interesting, people suddenly improve, like I guess like, you know, she was otherwise a young, healthy person, but I knew nothing about her. No one really did because we couldn't really get any records on her. And so whatever, that's the way it went. And so the thing about being at Stony Brook as a single person during residency, that is, you know, residency, as maybe some of you can attest to, is a lonely process. And it's like, you know, it's isolating. And so that's actually part of the reason why we, Mert and I, started this, just to kind of like get some of this burden out, share some of these things. But when I was there, you know, I didn't really have a lot of friends. I had like the people I went to residency with, they were cool, but like not that cool. So like, you know, I wasn't really like into hanging out with them. And you know, so I would go out, you know, I would just like go out and go to like the four local bars, have a drink, you know, I had my little like kind of like my little like my program. I go to one place, get something to eat, have a drink, go to another place, they had some good music, and then for a late night place, there was like this kind of late night lounge. So a couple months later, I'm like, it's winter time, I'm definitely feeling loungy. I go to the lounge, I've had a couple of pops, I'm drinking, and like I'm just kind of surveying the kind of landscape of this of the bar, small bar. And I notice at the end of the bar, there's like this little group of people, like, you know, kind of circling up, and they're all having like carousing, have a good time. And in the middle of this group, and I'm just kind of, I've had a couple of drinks, so I'm like, I'm just kind of like looking over at them, like, you know, and I could see behind, like in the back of the group, there was like someone, everybody's kind of attending to this one person who I could not see, but I could see is her arm on the bar. And, you know, it wasn't immediately apparent, but like she put her arm on the bar and she was like kind of laughing it up. And it was literally like, I saw the arm, I'm like, holy shit, I know that fucking arm. And like I said it to myself, I'm like, I know that arm, you know, like to myself. And I knew exactly who it was. And so I kind of just maneuvered, you know, I went to the bar, I was sitting at a table, I went to the bar to kind of like order a drink, but I was kind of like leaning over. And there she was, having a great time, like totally normal, entertaining. And I was like, oh my God, this is beautiful. I know her story. She's gonna be like intrigued when I come over and tell her what I know about like this whole thing. We're connected. We are connected. And so I get the drink. And I actually get two drinks because I'm going to offer a drink. I'm going to come over and I'm walking over to her. And like, I'm thinking like, oh, she's going to fucking love this. It's going to be crazy. And like, I'm thinking like, what am I going to say? And as I'm realizing what I'm doing, I'm realizing, nah, that wouldn't be cool. I probably couldn't say that. Well, wait, what if I said, nah, that probably wouldn't be cool either. And then I just stood there and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? There's no way. There's nothing. This is not, and so, you know, the surreptitious constraints of what we do in, within the realm of professionalism obviously hit me late and like in a subtle way. But when I finally got it, I realized like, oh yeah, that's not what this is not like, you know, there's no way this is ethically cool for me to do this. No, I don't even know what I was thinking. Maybe it's the alcohol. But like, and so, instead, I just stood there, probably if someone was watching me, and like looking weird, but like watching her and enjoying the fact that this person was living her life again and looking like she was normal and having a good time. The episode I had last week that reminded me of this story was that I treated this woman for gonorrhea. And I sent her out, we had this long talk, and she was like, we kind of like, you know, talked about her sexual history, which led to like this whole idea of like what it's like to date in New York City and like the single world. And like, I was telling her like, oh yeah, I remember that. I don't envy you, it sucks, you know? And we kind of like had this kind of like conversation and made her feel, I was trying to make her feel more comfortable with what was going on. She had, you know, multiple sexual partners, whatever. And so I discharged her. She was like really, you know, sweet. We had this like cool connection. She left. A couple days later, and this is last week, I'm walking down the street with my kids. Now, I'm old, but I have like young kids. I'm walking, and I look up and I hear Dr. Schiller, and like, and no one calls me doctor. And like immediately when someone says Dr. blah blah blah, I'm like, oh shit, you know, on the street. And I look up, and there's this woman, and she's clearly on a date with some dude. And she's like, I'm like, hey. She's like, how you doing? Good, you know, like, you know. Just want to say hello. I was, you know, usually I would introduce my kids to them, but you know, it was just one of these passing things. And so, So being, it's just another one of the thousand reminders that being a physician can be truly weird. Thank you.